PFT Media.
Looking beyond the pillars of the Taj Mahal to find secrets and a story of brothers' mass murder, this is Half True History. Good evening. Welcome to Half True History, where we take the legends of yesterday, put them with the facts of today, and come up with a decent story to get you interested in something. I am your professor for the night, Dan P. And as always, controlling the airwaves is super producer Chris Crespo.
What is up? It is me controlling all of the airwaves.
All of them. That's the last one of them.
Nice.
And of course, always there, the Hank Azaria to my white shame, Pedro Lima.
Oh, hey, everybody. Hello, everybody.
Did you see that Apu documentary on HBO?
No, I have not.
I saw it.
Did you watch it?
Yeah. He comes off a little whiny, unfortunately.
But I get it.
Right. I'm not saying his point's not there. He just comes off whiny. So it probably could have been done because it could have been this whole like really nice facet on Indian Americans and how they really are, but it really turned into this hunt to get Hank Azaria to be in his documentary.
Oh, that's what it was?
Yeah. And so it was just kind of
I want to get Hank Azaria.
Yeah, I want Hank Azaria to talk to me about this. And yeah, so it's the whole. This is like a hunt for Hank Azaria while he talks with other Indian American actors about their impressions on Apu. But I think they could have done so much more.
And that's called The Trouble with Apu, right? Was the name of that?
Yes, The Trouble with Apu. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I get it, and it's just part of change. And change is happening. It's funny because people just go, it's like, oh, but here's a white guy doing a thing. But I think Hank Azaria is from Guatemala or has Guatemalan roots.
He is, I believe he's a Sephardic Jew from Spain, something like that.
His grandmother's from Guatemala or something
like that. Okay.
Because when he did Birdcage.
Yeah.
He was doing an homage to his grandmother.
So let's get back on topic though. So even speaking of Hank Azaria and Pooh, of course we look to another thing that people think about when they think of India is they think of the Taj Mahal.
You think? Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you said, hey, name like three Indian things or five Indian things, I'm sure Taj Mahal is going to be on almost everyone's list.
Taj Mahal will be, yeah. Taj Mahal, Gandhi.
Mm-hmm. Bollywood.
Bollywood. Slumdog Millionaire.
Right.
Chaiwala. I still say that. That's such a good movie, too.
I love Bollywood films. They're amazing.
I don't know about that. I like Slumdog Millionaire, and the ending part, I was like, oh, the credits are, oh, they're dancing. Yeah, no, we can leave.
If you're not into musicals, yeah, then they're not your thing. But yeah, I really enjoy them for the musical productions.
I've seen the clips of the crazy action movies, though.
Oh, God. Yeah. The Doom series is over the top.
Is that the detective that pulls out like Like the Bugs Bunny cartoon amount of guns?
I believe it's about a, yeah, I know, because it's a series of detective chasing international thieves type of movies. And I remember Doom 2 very well. I don't remember Doom 1 that well, but it's just ridiculous action. Yeah.
So we're going to India.
Yeah. Taj Mahal, going to talk a little bit about it. You know, everyone knows kind of the original story of what the Taj Mahal is. And for those of you who don't, the Taj Mahal is, it's a tomb.
No, it really?
Yeah, it's a tomb.
I had no idea. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is it one single tomb?
Yeah.
Or is it a mausoleum?
It was originally made to be one single tomb. There are others buried later on, but this entire thing was for one person.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So we go to the Mughal Empire, the last major Indian empire in the 1600s. This is considered a real golden age of India's history. And it's interesting because this is a dynasty that is going to rule India, or northern India at least, for about 300 years. It's a Muslim dynasty. Because they invaded from Central Asia. It's a Muslim dynasty. It takes over originally in the 1500s. The chieftain was named Babur, just like the elephant.
What is his name?
Babur.
Babar? Oh, yeah. Babur.
Babar. Yeah, that's where they get it from.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so he comes across. They conquer northern India. Now, Muslim armies have been conquering northern India before this, about 400 years before this. And they keep thinking that they can just destroy a bunch of Hindu temples and force Islam and just convert all of India to Islam. Which... dynasty after dynasty, they just fail over and over again, because, you know, I think one of the hardest things is to convert someone from polytheism to monotheism.
Yeah, because you got to pick the one god you want,
right? Like, you're like grabbing somebody from a buffet and being like, okay, here, eat this burger forever.
Yeah,
no one did that.
You want them to do Sophie's Choice. The boy or the girl, which one you want.
So they're big, big failures. And Babur tries the same thing. He fails too. His grandson, though, is going to become considered one of the greatest of all Indian rulers. His name is Akbar.
I heard that guy.
Yeah. Akbar the
general. He became a general.
He did. Yeah. He did. He was really good at identifying traps.
Okay, he was very good. He would call them out sometimes. He would do his move. I remember this in books. He would do this move. It's like, it's a trap. It's like, oh, thank you, General Akbar. We didn't see it.
So Akbar comes up with this crazy idea of actually tolerating all religions in the Mughal Empire.
How dare he?
Right? He gets some flack, actually, from a lot of the Arab Muslims out there in the Middle East. And
it's weird because it doesn't matter which religion it is, if it's Muslim, Christian, Catholic, or whatever. If you just express, well, let's just be open-minded. Ah, you sinner.
Yep. Yep. Anybody in that big throne of power doesn't like what you're talking about.
Let's be tolerant. Ah, stupid. There's only one.
Akbar is going to be the first Muslim empire to ban the what was called known as the Jizya tax.
The Jizya tax?
Jizya tax. It's J-I-Z-Y-A. Jizya. Jizya.
The Jizya tax?
And it was basically a tax for not being Muslim. So all the other Muslim empires. Yeah, it's all the other Muslim empires. They allowed Jews and Christians and everything else, but they had to pay extra taxes in order to keep doing that in the empire.
Oh, okay.
Right. But he's the first Muslim empire to get rid of it. He's like, listen, I want everyone to be loyal members of the Mughal Empire. I don't want people to be loyal to their religion, identify with their religion, because that's what's going to split us apart. So in many ways, he's one of the first nationalists in Asia. And with that, there's just this huge flood of culture and trade. And, you know, India becomes this powerhouse once again, economic center of the world. And this is, keep in mind.
Look at that, at peace.
I'm sorry?
They're at peace.
Yeah.
They're prospering. They're tolerant. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he was really working on this idea of a united, you know, just this united empire. And again, like I said, they were doing really well. They were becoming one of the economic centers of the world by 1600. And that's at the same time that the Spanish have robbed all of the natives of their gold and silver, and they're still competing with that. So it was doing well. The spice trade was booming. Cinnamon was now the most popular spice being spread around the world.
You think people were doing the cinnamon challenge back then?
Yeah. You think one idiot, like, how many people overdosed on cinnamon?
Someone early on must have thought, like, I can get a spoonful of this.
I bet you can't.
I mean, they had opium at the time, so maybe.
Mix it in.
If you do a thing of opium and then take the cinnamon challenge, do you feel the choking?
You're dead for sure. You don't even have the muscle strength to go.
It just gunks you up, and then you die. You suffocate and die.
Yeah, yeah. It throws a wet pixie stick.
Uh-huh.
That's just hard. And then you gotta go like this. You just break it apart.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Yeah. So it's just, yeah, it's this great empire, and the next few rulers continue Akbar's ideas of peace, love, and harmony. It continues with his grandson, and he will be known as Shah Jahan.
This is Akbar's grandson.
Akbar's grandson is Shah Jahan, yes.
Which makes him the great, great grandson of the first guy. Who's the first guy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Babar.
Yeah. Now, the thing with the Mughal Empire is the throne is not guaranteed to the firstborn. It's a constant fight amongst the Indian princes over who's going to take the throne. That way it ensures the strongest person will become emperor.
You also avoid, like, emperor babies.
Right. So the goal is to try and play this political game and getting good with all your siblings so that when the time comes, nobody steps up. If you're the oldest, no one tries to step up and take your crown. Well, that doesn't happen with Jahan and his brothers or his cousins. So yeah, he's got to go through a civil war, has to execute his brothers and cousins and nephews to make sure that there's no other troubles to his line. So Shah Jahan, you know, he's definitely starts off with a very bloody regime, but he still has a legacy to continue of Akbar. And the reason I'm talking about all of this, I want to get to the point here, though, is he's the one who commissions the Taj Mahal to be built.
The great, great, great grandson of Babar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Jan.
Shah Jahan. The entire thing is a tomb for his third and favorite wife, Mumtaz Mahal.
The grave was for Mumtaz Mahal?
Mumtaz Mahal, yeah, his third wife and his favorite wife, the one he actually loved.
What a romantic.
Wow. This is where I'm going to bury you, bitch.
I mean, it was just, yeah, he's like, I'm going to create a wonder of the world as your grave.
Man, that's going to suck when I show Lisa her gravesite on her birthday.
Right? I got
hey,
this.
Hey, baby, look, this is my pick.
Yeah, Taj Lima doesn't have the same ring to it either.
Nah, it's going to be a hole in the Winter Park Cemetery. I hope you like it. It's near the Lakemont Avenue. So you can hear the traffic.
The Whole Foods traffic.
Disturbed graves.
Yeah. It's right near that Circle K that's doesn't even have a gas pump. It's just like a convenience store that has a historical district assignment to it. And people have been trying to get it out of there. Yeah, your grave is like, you know, half a mile away from it in case you want to, you know, spook some clients.
So it takes, it obviously takes a few decades to get this thing done. But it is, it's not like they were, he was running out of time. Mumtaz, she dies at a very early age.
How early?
She was about, I want to say,
an hour after he told her the plans.
I think she's about 34 when she dies.
So he just held on to the body until they built that shit?
She was buried in a private garden that he had made for a while.
Okay.
She dies giving birth to his 14th child.
Hold up. This chick was popping babies since she was 20 nonstop. No twins?
No.
Just pop, 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 pop. Machine Gun Kelly.
Yep. And seven of them live to adulthood.
Wow. That's a great success rate there.
Yeah, so 50% right there.
Can't beat it. So, yeah, she dies of a hemorrhage on the 14th child. Oof.
Oh, that's when it took. The 14th was too much.
That was a 10-pounder.
Dude, this guy's a savage. Like, as soon the second the baby made the exit, he was already in?
Pretty much. I mean, the goal is to have as many heirs as possible, because as you can see from that death percentage, you just never know. And here's the thing.
What'd they die of?
He's going to marry 8 more times before he dies.
How many kids per?
Oh, who knows? His issue list is ridiculous.
Are these kids dying of like just normal diseases and dysentery and stuff?
Yep.
Maybe if they had less kids, they could spend more time caring for them and making sure they live.
Right? Yeah. That one kid that got run over by the cow.
Yeah, because no one was there to watch it. There's too many kids.
Yeah.
So it's so yeah, he builds this beautiful Taj Mahal, and most people of course know it as the Taj Mahal. And you know, the general's trivia fact that most people have is they might know that it's Mumtaz's tomb. But additionally, thank you, History Cat. Additionally, there's a lot more that they discovered within about the past 20 years or so, that there's actually some more secrets behind the building of the Taj Mahal that Jahan had put in there. You know, not scandalous secrets or anything like that, but like kind of like hidden Mickey Mouse stuff. So
is it corny? Like corny stuff, like, oh, look, I one of the mitts I put in the cinder block, they'll never know.
It was a lot of mystic maps. The Taj Mahal is actually a mystic map.
You know, Danny Davenport, he does in construction sites. He tells me any building that you see is under construction will definitely have a cup of urine between the walls.
I like it.
Especially like higher buildings and stuff like that, because they'll pee in a cup and then they'll just lay the wall on it. So there has to be cups or something, a thermos of pee somewhere. It's like a signature thing that these contractors do.
Fantastic.
So kids, start punching holes in the walls and get looking for those cups.
Yeah, find that dry cup of urine. You win a prize.
That's a team building exercise for your company.
Yeah, first one to find a cup gets a weekend off.
The outline of the Taj Mahal represents the Sufi map of the cosmos. To the left, the gardens in front of the Taj Mahal represent the gardens of paradise and heaven. In order to get to the Taj Mahal, you take a walkway to the, if you're facing the Taj Mahal, it's to the right. And that represents the path, the struggle of meditation and righteousness it takes to get to heaven. Wow. Right. The,
How high was that contractor?
It gets even better than this. It's got two meanings. The pool, the that lake in the middle, that little pond in the middle, represents the reflection and gathering of the great people for the judgment of Armageddon, the last judgment. And the actual building itself is supposed to represent God's throne. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's looking at it from a cosmos perspective as far as the heavens. But if you go even further to its outline, if you look at it from an aerial view, and I don't know who the hell was going to be doing that in 1650, but if you look at it from an aerial view, the large dome represents the eternal life or the sun, and then the smaller little domes all around it are the planets rotating around it to represent the Sufis mystic swirling that they do, the whirling dervishes.
Now I want to see this Taj Mahal thing. This, I didn't know it had that many little things. I thought it was just...
Do you think they had, they must have had hot air balloons back then? 1600s?
Not yet. No, 1700s we get the hot air balloons, but in France.
Oh, there's a little lighthouse on these things. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So from above, you could see the cosmos, the planets around the sun representing the perfect balance. And the Sufis were a very mystic branch of Islam. So they really believed that we were all part of the cosmos. We were all a piece of Allah itself. And so us swirling in gravitation, the planets themselves are a representation of, our souls being connected to God and orbiting at all times. Did I mention opium was legal?
Yeah, cinnamon challenge.
And even beyond that, which had not been discovered for a while, now the back of the Taj Mahal, there's a river. And across the river was his private gardens. It was this huge, beautifully developed, beautifully manicured garden filled with like the sweetest smelling lavenders and nightshades and with jujubes and other like fresh sweet fruits and everything like that. So it would bring this sweet smell. He could eat and everything like that. And there was this pavilion right there on the bank of the river and surrounded by, you know, these sweet smells where he could just sit there in the moonlight and watch the Taj Mahal and see it in the moonlight glowing with all this stuff to really enhance the experience.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, this guy. Was it opium or mushrooms? Because that sounds like a mushroom trip to me.
It probably was. There is so much drug use in history that nobody talks about.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing illegal yet. So probably. The Sufis, they believed in getting that adrenaline rush, that runner's high. They believe that when you got that, that was the feeling you got when you were closer to God. So they always tried to, that's why they were always dancing and spinning and stuff to get that runner's high, to find that connection with God. So I wouldn't rule out the fact that probably there were a lot of other methods involved to give them that connection. Unfortunately, Shah Jahan is going to live long enough to see what will be the beginning of the end of the Mughal Empire. He gets sick. And many people don't think he's going to get out of it. And so his oldest son, Dara.
The Explorer?
Dara the Explorer. Claims the throne. Well, then all three of his other brothers claim the throne as well. These are the direct lines. These are the guys who are allowed to claim the throne. It's Dara. Two guys you don't need to worry about because they're totally going to get, they're going to eat shit in just a second. And then the third youngest brother, Aurangzeb. And I think we've mentioned Aurangzeb before in this, in one of our segments when we're talking about Indian great empires. I think we were talking about like religious tolerance. Because Aurangzeb is definitely the anti-Shah Jahan, the anti-Akbar. He wants to go back to Orthodox Islam. He wants the Hindus and Buddhists to pay the taxes again. He wants everything back to the way it was and be a strict Muslim empire again. And it would have turned a lot of people off, except Dara himself was going even further than Jahan and Akbar in his new religious research. And he was actually publishing books and writing books about talking about the merge. His ultimate plan was to merge all the religions together to create, because he believed, he truly believed that after speaking with the Sufis and the Hindus and the Buddhists and all that, he believed that it was basically one God sending multiple messengers. Because he said the parallels are all the same. The doctrines are all the same at the end of the day. He says the only thing that changes really is the vocabulary.
This guy was going to tap. He was going to crack open the safe.
Yep. He was on the verge of merging Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, Buddhist into this one grand religion.
And that's when Jack Ruby shot him.
And that, you know, so the war goes on. A lot of people are a little bit scared of Dara's ideas. He's still very, very much loved, but just enough of his family is spooked enough to join Aurangzeb's side. Aurangzeb is able to defeat him twice in battle. Finally, Dara puts up positions at Anjmar, which is in northern India, in Pakistan, actually. It's northern India back then, Pakistan. And he has this great fortification. He's got European cannons. He's got some help from a lot of the outside world because they want to see Dara succeed. And he basically puts up this almost 300-style defense where it's almost impossible to get to him. But there's a reason why I mentioned it's a 300-style defense.
Is he Xerxes or is he Leonidas?
He's Leonidas.
Is it 300-style because ultimately it fails?
Yeah.
Yep. Because of the same reason.
Not enough people?
Secret
path. Oh, he didn't want to promote a cripple?
Oh, secret path.
Secret path. Yep. Someone betrayed him and told the Aurangzeb about the secret path through the mountains to get the army from behind and capture Dara. In order to celebrate his victory, Aurangzeb takes Dara and he's trying to humiliate him to everyone in order to lose popularity. He strips him of all his titles and regal outfits, puts him in some shabby peasant clothes, and then puts him on a old, clapped-up female elephant and parades him around town, driven by a slave. It backfires in the public relations department, though, because he sees a lot of people crying for Dara and sympathizing for him. And he realizes that Dara cannot live because of his popularity.
Oh, no.
So Dara and his oldest son are put into the tomb of Humayun, which is their ancestor, son of Babar, in prison until their fate is decided. Now, in the meantime, Aurangzeb is busy killing his other two brothers who joined Aurangzeb's side. But
we just need to make sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, no, it's time to godfather, everyone.
Set all family business.
Mm-hmm. Now, Shah Jahan is still alive in all this, but Aurangzeb has declared him feeble and unstable and has convinced enough people to lock him away in the Agra Fort.
Wow.
So here he is, the emperor of the Mughal Empire in prison while his sons killed themselves. He sends troops finally to the tomb of Humayun. And in front of Dara's son, a group of his thugs holds Dara down and beheads him.
Whoa.
That's what's up. Mm-hmm.
Then they give the son opium and strangle him.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. The head is brought to Aurangzeb. And Aurangzeb looks at the head and he tells his troops, he's like, I didn't want to look at that kefir. when he was alive. What makes you think I want to look at him dead? And with that, he takes his sword and hacks the head about 3 times.
Ooh, crazy.
Jesus. Mm-hmm. Even the cat's traumatic.
Yeah. And then he's going to send a message to his father that he is now the emperor. He sends...
the head.
He sends a package to his father, who's eating breakfast one morning.
Oh, no. Is it in a box?
It's in a box.
What's in the box?
And he says, it says on there, the messenger repeats the message. This is from your son, Aurangzeb, with the message, Father, do not think I have forgotten you. And so dad thinks it's a nice present.
What's in the box?
Yeah, he's like, okay, my son's forgiven me. Maybe he's changed his mind.
Yeah, what's in the box?
Opens it up like it's a kid on Christmas.
What's in the box?
And sees Kara's mangled head.
All chopped up. Morgan Freeman's freaking out. John Doe got the upper hand.
Jahan, at 76, faints from the shock. Falls forward and knocks out his front teeth on the table.
Ugh.
Well, he still had teeth. Well, good for him.
Yeah, right? He's still imprisoned, and within a few years, the old man dies. They wanted a grand procession and everything, but Aurangzeb said no and simply buried him in the tomb with Mumtaz. As for Dara, his body and his son's body are put in unmarked graves around the tomb of Humayun. And it wasn't until about, I want to say, 46 years ago that India put out a full geographical search for it and found the body and properly buried the would-be emperor and his son in the tomb of Humayun with his ancestors.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's like, what, 250, 300 years later?
Mm-hmm. So it was a great, very, very rough time. This is really the fall of the Mughal Empire. Aurangzeb's policies are very, very successful at first. He expands the empire. Lots of wealth starts to come in and everything. But for some reason, his no tolerance gets more and more people to start heading, Hindus leaving the Mughal Empire and heading south to a... Hindu kingdom called the Maratha. And the Maratha start a war eventually with Aurangzeb and the Mughals, known as the 27-year war, where eventually the Hindus defeat the Mughals and their empire starts to get smaller and smaller. Now there's more to this, of course, because we're now in the 1700s. This is where the Europeans are, of course, playing the game. According to some legends, again, we don't know, we don't have too many documents on it, but the Maratha beat the Mughals so well because of some brand spanking new British artillery cannons that were given to them, donated, which makes sense considering who makes the next move on India afterwards.
Someone interested in a tea company, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
In a trading company.
Exactly. A certain East India company decided to give a nice donation of cannons and firearms to the Maratha to defeat the most powerful of the Indian empires. And that's the end of the Mughals. It really is. They just gonna decline more and more until eventually the British completely take over the continent by 1850. Yeah. And so the Taj Mahal houses Mumtaz Mahal. And now Shah Jahan.
So two people.
Mm-hmm. What about his kid?
His kid's buried in Humayun. So everyone gets buried with their ancestors except for the two brothers who nobody cares about.
The ones I got wiped out right away.
Yeah. You know, man, just... And you know, too, you should know if you're that middle kid that's not getting it. Like, you should have the good sense to know.
Yeah.
Like... You know who dad's favorite is already.
Yeah. Be what is it? Harry, find out Meghan Markle.
Mm-hmm.
Just go. You know William's going to get it.
Exactly. Just do your thing.
You go to Canada, bro.
So, yep, and that's the all the secrets there of the Taj Mahal that we know of. But yeah, it's more than just a building. It's got a lot of like artistic it's aspects. The casino. What? You know, it's funny. It seems to be anybody associated with the word Taj Mahal who ends up wanting to ban Muslims or to ban certain people from their country, and they just don't seem to do so well. I don't know why. It's like clockwork. I mean, it's almost disgusting. And I think we've said this show after show, so I'm sure some people are getting tired of me saying it, but it's almost disgusting, like how history goes, where every time you get someone who shuts the borders, the empire falls. Mm-hmm. And it's all because they had a slight economic dip and they're like, oh no, we need to secure our economy for this short term. And then everything crumbles every time.
We're tired of these people taking the jobs that we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but we'll hire them.
Yeah,
but we don't want them.
But we'll build our factories in their countries.
Mm-hmm.
Because freedom.
Freedom, ego. Where's the ego?
Call.
Yeah, that vulture.
Well, everyone, we thank you for listening to us tonight. Please, as always, we've got all the shows, the PFT, running at a lightning pace despite any lockdowns or anything like that. The show's all doing well, yeah. Mr. Crespo?
Yes, all the shows are persevering in the face of the governor's insistence that we lock down, and we're open, baby. Come on, it's awesome. We got all the shows going. It's fantastic. PFTmedia.com.
The governor wants to lock down? The
governor doesn't want nothing. He wants all the business.
Yeah, he wants everything open.
Open, open, open. That's what he wants.
Go out there. You got the vaccine. Go on.
Yeah, I am. I'm out there.
Test it out. See if you guys catch something before soccer season starts.
Yeah, I'm asking people to start coughing in my face to see how good this thing works.
Yeah, dude, you got that Johnson & Johnson free baby tears vaccine. So. Yeah,
like, come on, guys. Let's test this thing out. Let's take it for a ride. Take it for a spin.
If you see Crespo in the street, just make out with him relentlessly.
Yes, please. Run at me with that thing.
All right, everyone. Well, namaste very much for hanging out with us. And I wish you a salam. And this has been Half True History, and we'll see you on the next page.
Peace. Ganga Dean, bring the water. So steal all that you can, the magic you began. Let's shout.
A PFT Media production.